Welcome back to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, author Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I posted an interview with someone who's inspiring us to live more consciously for a better world. And in my take on what's happening out there, my goodness me, we need all the help we can get these days. So I'm so delighted that my guest today is freelance garden writer, historian, and photographer Liz Ware, whose passion is introducing silent spaces into public paths, gardens, and green spaces where anyone can go just sit and reflect silently in nature. Liz started Silent Space in 2016, initially as a non-for-profit project, which has now evolved into full charitable status, supported by major gardening societies and leading garden experts. Liz's articles and photographs have appeared in lots of leading horticultural magazines, and she's a member of the Garden Media Guild and Professional Garden Photographers Association. And as she said, and I'm very envious of this, her work with plants has taken her all over the globe. So welcome, Liz. I have to say, you have such a beautiful website, and I love your vision of inviting visitors to these outdoor silent spaces to switch off from the outside world and just to take time to reflect. So how did all this come about for you?
Oh, thank you, Sue. It's lovely to be here and to have the opportunity to talk about this. Wonderful. Well, it goes back decades. I'd had the idea a long, long time ago when I first started. So I had my children, and when they started school, I requalified horticulture and garden history, all sorts of things. So eventually I was working as a freelance garden writer for a small magazine. I was doing the photographs and the copy. And I would need to get the light first thing in the morning. I would be in gardens at sunrise, and there would sometimes be a little gap, if I was lucky, before I did the interview with the head gardener. So I'd be in this amazing place where I wasn't responsible for anything, beautiful, biodiverse space, just wandering or sitting. And I noticed over the months that the days that I did that, I felt fantastic for the rest of the day. Calm and centered, not so easily ruffled by all the things that you usually are doing as a youngish mum working as well. And I thought, you know, this is such a privilege. I wonder if there's a way that it could be shared. How could this be made available to more people, but without creating extra work for garden teams? Because I spent a lot of time in gardens, I knew that there was no extra time or extra staff or extra money to start maintaining something different. So I thought, well, maybe if an area that was already being visited by the public was kept, maybe for a few hours a week, maybe for longer, just where people could sit and be silent. So the garden, sounds of the garden go on around them, but the people in the space are silent, a bit like the quiet carriage on the train. But you know how it is, you have an idea and you do nothing about it because your life is so busy. So I didn't. And then something happened, a couple of things happened. I signed up for a course at Schumacher College down in...
Oh, it's a wonderful place, isn't it? Yeah.
It was in 2014, I think, 2015, somewhere around there. And it was called Right Livelihood. And it was about moving your work into a way that is was more beneficial for everybody. In a way, if you could. At the same time, a member of my family, well, it was my mother actually, had a dementia diagnosis and was given about 3 years to live. And all of a sudden, working to deadlines, which of course I did as a freelance writer, became really difficult. So I scaled that back. And because I was doing this course that needed a project to work on, I thought, hey, what about that idea I had all those years ago for Silent Space? This could be the time to work on it. And so that's what happened. And maybe before I tell you the rest of the story, I can talk to you about why I think and why and the kind of research that demonstrates why that time being silent and reflecting made me feel good and realize this is something that should be shared. And there are two sort of strands to that. The first is there's a lot of neuroscience out there to show that taking time to reflect quietly helps us to avoid overwhelm. I mean, we know it really, don't we? But because of the world we live in now, we tend not to do it. There are so many pressures. Technology is fantastic, but it does put a lot of pressure on us. Anyway, the best summary of that neuroscience that I've come across is by a business psychologist called Tony Crabb. And I heard him speak on a podcast by Oliver Berkman a few years ago called Oliver Berkman is Busy. He's brilliant, I think, Oliver Berkman. Anyway, Tony Crabb said that we are at our best when our brains follow a particular pattern, and that is think, reflect. Think, reflect. Well, how often do we do that? I mean, I think we often think to ourselves, we know when we're feeling overwhelmed, gosh, I'm just going to go outside and clear my head. But sometimes it's not possible. So we sort of know it inside, but I think the world conspires against it. So that to me was a great summary of the neuroscience. And the other thing is that it's actually much easier for most of us to reflect outside than inside. So outside in nature, not everybody, there are some people who for particular reasons aren't comfortable in nature, but for most of us, it's really helpful. And the research behind that goes back, I mean, there's a lot more now, but it goes right back to late 1980s, early 1990s, two people, Rachel and Stephen Kaplan, who coined the phrase gentle or soft fascination. And the idea is that nature provides us with just enough distraction when we're reflecting in it to stop us doing that downward spiral into overthinking. It's just enough, which is really interesting, isn't it? Because phones, I think, and technology tends to distract us to an extent that there's nothing left, no space left in our head.
Is it this? We're over busy, aren't we? We're over-analyzing. Yeah. We're always working things out or working to schedules or... Yeah. There is no space in our head. Yeah. And I think for me, when I go into nature and have a conscious walk, and as you say, it's that sense of I have to clear my head. And it's ingrained in us, but most of us kind of don't listen to it. But anyway, I'm just fascinated by the you know, it is called the power of silence for a reason.
Yes. And of course, there are different sorts of silence. If you choose it, it's wonderful. To have silence forced on you isn't necessarily good. Okay. So this, we're talking about silence that we've chosen. So shall I go on and tell you about the next step?
Yes.
So having decided.
Totally. It's just such an important subject to talk about. And we don't, you know, people seem to be frightened of stopping or stepping into silence because it's a scary place and suddenly you're, you know, what do I do with my thoughts? What do I do with myself?
Yeah. But that's what nature helps us with that. Mm. Interestingly, when I'm jumping ahead a little bit, really, but one of the comments we had in feedback during our pilot was, thank you for permission to be silent. Wow. And I think that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? Yeah. So anyway, 2016, having talked to some head gardeners about the idea and having promised them that the way that we were thinking of doing it would be very easy for them, wouldn't give them any extra work. It wouldn't lose them visitors when we suggested to people they might want to switch off their phone for 5 minutes. It was all going to be fine. We ran a pilot. So 2016, we got going and we had about 9 or 10 gardeners around the country who all agreed to take part 4 Sundays in June. It actually started on my birthday. I didn't tell anyone that, but that seemed quite nice. And, you know, it went really, really well. And we started off with people, the staff on the garden entrance, talking to people as they came in. And that was really interesting because once people had heard about the silent space, they just wanted to talk about how busy life was. And their response was always, oh, how lovely, with a sort of a dropping of the shoulders. Oh, what a lovely thought. But we realized after the first day of doing that was a great response, but it didn't tell us what was going on in the space. So we left notebooks in the space. It didn't have any instructions. It just said on the front page, reflections from a silent space. So the first weekend, we collected them up at the end of the weekend and thought, oh gosh, what are we going to have here? Are people going to say, how dare you suggest I switch off my phone? Or have you thought that maybe this isn't the right place for it? We didn't know what we were going to have. But, you know, Sue, it was so heartwarming. It really was. It makes me feel quite emotional. People drew pictures. They left poems. And the words that appeared most often were thank you. And it was thank you for all kinds of things. It was thank you for the space. Thank you for the garden. Thank you to the gardeners. Thank you to the universe, to God, you know, whatever language they used. Always thank you. And the really interesting thing about that for us was that social scientists encourage people to express gratitude in order to measure their well-being. Well, all we'd done was put up a little blackboard at the entrance to a part of the garden that people always visited, but on this particular day, it said, we invite you to come in and spend time reflecting quietly. Please switch off your devices, or something similar. That's all we'd done.
I mean, it seems like what you did, you created a sacred space. And I always feel like that's what we've lost in life, is the sacredness of life. And when we're invited into, it's like when you go into, I go to a Buddhist meeting on a Wednesday night, and with the candles lit in this lovely room, it turns into a sacred space. And it sort of reintroduces me to something different. It sort of talks to that deeper part of me that wants the sacred. Does that make, that's exactly what your space was doing for you, for your visitors.
I think so. It's difficult now because we've lost the language to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a silence in us all, and we need to connect to that. And this is a really simple way of doing it. And we deliberately don't use words like mindfulness or meditation because that's not inclusive. It doesn't matter how. You can sit there and go through, I don't know, a list of what you in your head, a list of things you're going to do during the day. It doesn't matter. You reflect in your own way, but the response is still the same.
And what, my experience of being in consciously walking in nature is this this feeling of being connected to something greater than me.
Yeah. Yes, I think that. And I suspect it's reciprocal with nature. We've no evidence about that yet, but that's something that needs to be explored. That when we are sitting quietly with ourselves, there is some sort of connection with the nature that's around us.
It's something greater, isn't it? And there's a lot of, I was at the Medicine Festival and went to a lot of talks recently to do with connecting with the mycelium, of understanding that we're treading on this incredible mushroom mycelium, or you go to a tree and you can actually have a conversation with the tree or a plant, or there's a sort of growing awareness that nature is our friend. It isn't this weird thing that we live amongst or shut ourselves away from. And I just feel like what you're doing is just really inviting people to in their own way to have those experiences of, wow, there's something more going on than just me.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think we sense that connection if we give ourselves the time to sit and be still, or walk and be still. You can be still inside while you're walking, can't you?
Yes, definitely. And it's such an interesting thing to hear that you're, some of the feedback was thank you for the permission be silent. I mean, that's quite a thing to say, isn't it? Because do we need permission to be silent? Well, obviously in our crazy mad worlds, we do.
Yeah, it's okay to stop. It's okay to take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and you can do it in a biodiverse place, even better.
Yeah, yeah. So where is your vision taking you, Liz?
Well, we have 74 silent spaces now.
In the UK, or is it?
Just in the UK. We also have something in three schools in Australia. and a botanic garden in New Zealand. And that's an interesting one because that is the botanic garden is open 24/7, which the one in New Zealand, which provides a few problems because you can't really relax and reflect unless you feel safe.
That's true.
And that's slightly, for some reason, that's slightly easier in a garden that closes at night. So the person, the education manager at this Dunedin Botanic Garden came up with a wonderful idea. She suggested they would have a trail instead, a silence-based trail. And they produced a fantastic little map. So people pick up the silence space map and they walk, follow this trail, and there are suggested stop points. And if you feel comfortable sitting in that stop point, there might be a lovely view or it might be particularly biodiverse area, then you stop on that bench. But if you don't feel like it, you walk silently. And they walk silently while the rest of the garden is going on. So there'll be people cycling past them or walking past them, but they're doing their own thing. And I walked it with Claire when I was in New Zealand. And it was beautiful, really beautiful.
But also, I suppose, holding the silent space where everything else is still going on around them must be a really lovely experience.
Yes.
The vision I just got when you were talking about that was walking the labyrinth. You know, that sort of when you purposely step and you follow a map of, you know, on the floor. And it's just such an ancient symbol. And people have been doing, I mean, it's, I suppose what we're talking about actually is the art of pilgrimage, isn't it?
In a way, yeah.
You know, it's sort of opening up that sort of sense of there's something more than just me going on here. And there's a sense maybe of learning something about yourself or purposefully stepping out and using your body consciously rather than just, you know, I'm dashing around here, there and everywhere, and you're not absolutely conscious of actually being in a body. You're more like a sort of head on two legs. Does that make sense to you?
It does make sense. And the other thing is that unless we are still inside, that's when we get our creativity, our inspiration, and we all know that, don't we?
Yes.
I know if I'm in the middle of writing something and I'm stuck, if I go for a walk or do some gardening, just quiet. And the answer, when I had dogs, it used to be walking the dogs. And by the time I got back, the answer had sort of somehow come up, whatever it was I needed to find. So that's another aspect of it. You wonder how much more creative the world would be if we all found a little bit of space for ourselves.
Well, I do sometimes wonder what it must have been like before the Industrial Revolution. Mm. I mean, I'm not saying this was, you know, everybody had a great time because I think it was pretty hard work physically. Yeah. But there must have been so much silence, but that silence was natural sounds like, you know, the clop of a horse or the twittering of loads of birds, you know, rustling leaves, maybe a shout in the distance, the pig snorting, but that would have been it.
Yes. Yes, a very different soundscape.
Very different soundscape. And maybe that, you know, that there's an expression, you know, silence is golden. That always touched me, this sort of sense of silence is golden. And I've been on a lot of retreats in my life because silent retreats to take back that sense of connection with who I am without the busyness of life. But it always takes a couple of days to sink in and just be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't as easy as just, oh, I'll just go and be silent now.
No, it isn't. And that's why we suggest people, the invitation is to be, just come in and be silent for 5 minutes. Because it's not scary. And I'm sure people stay for longer than 5 minutes once they're comfortable with it. But it can take time.
I think a lot of people are scared of stopping because, there's a lot of unprocessed stuff or fear or anxiety or trauma going on. Mm. And by being really busy, you detract from what's actually physically going on inside you.
Yeah.
You know something isn't right.
Yes. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit more about the schools, because I love the idea of introducing silent space into schools as well.
I spoke, it was just sheer chance, when I was in New Zealand, there happened to be a Botanic Garden conference on while I was at a garden history conference, and a speaker dropped out 10 minutes before the keynote speaker. So, I mean, most people were off making coffee or going to the loo, but it didn't matter. I mean, it was great to have that opportunity to speak, and I was very jet lagged. But one person in the audience from a Sydney Botanic Garden actually picked up on what I was saying, and he does a lot of work with local schools, and he thought it could work really well in three schools. So he set that up. A couple of them are for schools for children with special educational needs who need that little bit of quiet. That is wonderful. We don't have anything in the UK. There are lots of people who are doing things in the UK in schools, I think.
Yeah, there are actually. I think, you know, things are definitely changing. But would you, in a vision of the future, would you like to see that there is a silent space in every school, for example? Is that something that you're...
That would be wonderful. We're a small team, and we're pretty stretched with what we're doing. So I think the fact that other people are working on that is great. But yes, wouldn't it be perfect if there was a place for children to go just have time out?
Yes, just to be able to stop and be okay. I'm just thinking about every hospital having a sacred, yeah. You know, you can go and yeah. sit in the chapel, which is non-denominational. Yeah. You know, even at the airports, they have a room where you can just go and sit quietly. And wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a kind of, I don't know, somewhere in the high street you could go and do that? Phone off just to go and sit and reconnect with who you are, because that's what it's all about, isn't it? This sense of this treasured silence, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
When I go on retreats, I'm also always very, what's the word for it? I was going to say word distress, and that's not the right word, but it feels very challenging to come out of silence. There's a wonderful book, and I think you know of it, was by Sue Maitland, it was called Silence. Yes. And I think I read it a long, long time ago, but it was a really groundbreaking book when it came out about her just disappearing off to experience silence. I think it was over a year. And she wrote this wonderful book. So if anybody's interested in actually reading about somebody's experience of consciously going into silence, I think both of us would recommend that book, don't you?
Yes, I would.
Mm. And also, you know, this whole concept of sitting quietly, it isn't about meditation or doing it right or wrong, is it?
Yeah. No, if you have a meditation practice or a mindfulness practice, fine. But you don't want to be sitting there thinking, oh, no, I'm not getting this right. Just sit and reflect. It doesn't matter.
Mm. What's the biggest gift that you've received from just being quiet?
Calm. And a sense of connection. I really feel a strong connection with the garden. And it's only when I stop that builds, and it's more than that, so it's difficult to put into words, but if you can experiment while there are still lots of insects around, if you stop for a minute and you look at a plant in front of you or a border or whatever, and you might spot initially one bee or one hoverfly, but if you just sit there for a few seconds, you suddenly realize it's full of life. And we walk past so often, so that connection kind of builds. If we give ourselves time to sit, we notice what's really there. And that environmentally is a big issue that we don't notice.
That's so true. I was, you know, when I was at the medicine festival, I was just lying on the grass. And, you know, there's loads of bugs mucking about and traveling past. I don't know where they were going, what they were doing, but they were very happy being bugs. And it did fill me with real joy to watch them and think, God, this is incredible that this ground is absolutely alive. And then you just stick a spade in the ground and whoosh, the worms appear. I mean, whether you like worms or not is neither here nor there. It's that sense of coming back to awe about the magic of the of earth and land, isn't it? And that's how I see it. And sitting quietly enables us to actually see that, doesn't it?
Well, for a start, we don't cause as much disturbance when we're still.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's another aspect. At the moment, I feel that it's great that there's so much going on in the, I don't like the term well-being industry, but and it's become an industry, which is another problem. But it's still too much about us, not so much about us being part of nature. So whatever we do doesn't just affect us. It also affects whatever, wherever we are and whatever we're in, whatever's around us.
You know, that's so true. It's still about us, isn't it? The well-being.
We're still focusing on us, yeah.
And what you're saying is by being much more conscious and present with nature, it becomes not small us, but it becomes bigger us, doesn't it?
It does become bigger us, yeah.
It's the planet, it's nature, it's knowing that there is something more than us.
Yeah.
We have very large egos, don't we?
Yes, yeah. And I think we shouldn't be too unkind to ourselves. We're encouraged to be busy, 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 and that's when we just walk past everything and don't notice the wonderful things that are around us.
Yeah. Yeah, I was walking back from the Buddhist meditation on Wednesday night, and it was the full moon in Pisces. It was just blew me away to see this incredible plant. Well, it's whatever it is. It's a rock in the you know. But it, and I was just thinking about without the moon, we wouldn't be here. And no. You know, sort of we forget the magic of our environment and how it enables us to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think that's what you're introducing, isn't it? This sort of sense of the sacred, really. Oh, what's his name? Harvey talks about the awe of life and bringing that awe back into our being. And I think that's what your sacred spaces are encouraging us to do.
Yeah, yes, yes. That's interesting. You called them sacred spaces, but in fact, we call them silent spaces. But yes, you're right, and you're not the first person to mention that.
Yeah. So, Liz, what's the next step? Where are you going now? What's your vision for? Well, we're all coming to the end of the year now.
We are. Well, we've got lots of exciting things happening. I won't give you the details until it's actually happened. But we have been working with a hospital on something that's happening in their staff garden. And with any luck, it'll all be happening in 2 weeks' time. But as it's a slow old process and you never know, I'm not going to say any more about it. So we'll see. Well, sort of, yes. Mm-hmm. Sort of. It will work, I know that. But a pilot project in terms of what else we can do in the future, certainly. Yeah.
Oh, that's so. Your vision is to just keep going and keep providing silent spaces.
I think what we would like to do is make the spaces we already have as run as beautifully as we can. We don't want to. The minute you start, a really important part of it is personal connection. So I've visited almost every garden. There've been a few joined since the pandemic that I haven't, but. And you form a relationship with the person who's running it. And that is really important. If you get too big, then the kind of heart of it disappears. So we're not madly collecting more gardens. We're trying to make the spaces as good as we possibly can.
Thanks, Liz, so much. I just found this. It's really made me think outside my box head. And I'm going to take time to reflect today on our conversation, because and just to encourage anyone who's listening to just take the time to go and just be silent and just see the benefits that that come from that. So Liz, thank you so much for that. So that was Liz Ware talking about the power of silence. And you can see from, if you go to www.silentspaces, or just check up Liz Ware on the internet, you'll find lots of information about her and her projects. So my November guest is Liz Rothschild, mastermind of Kicking the Bucket Festival, which celebrates our relationship with living and dying. Liz believes the two cannot be separated, and I completely agree with her. Now in its fourth year, the Kicking the Bucket Festival will take place over the first weekend of November, that's this November 2023, in and around Oxford. And I will be there as well, chairing one of the meetings there. So do go to kickingthebucket.co.uk for further information. And as always, it's going to be a great, fun festival. So see you on the 1st of November with Liz Rothschild talking about the festival and her work as a celebrant and owner of West Mill Woodland Burial Ground. And thanks for listening, and thanks to Liz, and bye for now.